Nan Cowarded-Lee has a PhD in organizational psychology. She's an anti-bullying advocate, coach, and consultant. She's the author of 10 Steps to Overcome Workplace Bullying. And Nan, I love this quote of yours. I don't have to be nice to bullies, and neither do you. We're going to talk about that. Nan, thank you so much for taking part in this conversation titled Navigating Workplace Bullying, Finding Resilience, and Feeling Joy, Even in Crisis. So, Nan, thanks again. I'm really eager to talk to you. We had a chance to talk last week. So much to get into. I guess where I'll start is you got unbelievable credentials in this arena, but yet you kind of started out as a child in a difficult, I guess, dysfunctional circumstance. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, and I think this may be common, but, you know, as a child, you're totally dependent on your parents. You can't tell that they are messing you up or that they have their own problems, right? And most things sort of manifest as you try to develop your own relationships later on. And then you go, well, what's wrong with me? But yeah, I was raised by two very narcissistic individuals who were concerned more about themselves than they were about being parents. And that really did mess me up for quite a while. And lots of therapy.
Okay. But and so, because I want to get to the final point, but no hurry here. But then you experienced bullying. And if I understood your story correctly, you were kind of looking at your career or your workplace as a second chance family. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, it was a way to start over, right? It was a way to feel successful in a family that wouldn't let me feel successful or wouldn't support me in things like going to college or, you know, developing my own career aspirations. If I didn't follow the traditional, you know, get married, have two kids and stay at home, then there was something wrong with me. So it took a lot of time to work through who I was. And part of working through that was to, you know, to develop my own idea of success and to go out into the world and to get a job and to feel successful in that arena, right? Because I didn't get that at home. So I was looking for that in the workplace.
And so you ended up at a Silicon Valley law firm, but it didn't seem that you found this loving family that you were looking for.
No, and that was probably my first step where I felt like I was actually moving into a more successful position because I was a supervisor for a secretarial service center. And so I had lots of, you know, secretaries underneath me and I was managing people and I was doing quite well. And then the boss that had hired me, who was really quite good and had been a legal secretary herself and worked her way up, she moved on and someone else replaced her who had no background in being a legal secretary, and the whole department blew up. And someone that I worked with died from natural causes. Well, not necessarily natural causes. She was overstressed and taking Fen-Phen. But
let's go back to that in a second. Your experience is that this was so toxic for you and others, but especially this person, that even though you may have identified that she died of natural causes, your feeling and maybe others too felt that the stress and the anxiety and the trauma that she experienced at work led to her early demise?
Well, she was working several jobs, and I think that is one of the unfortunate things about Silicon Valley. Unless you're a tech executive, you know, you may make a lot of money, but you can't really survive. It's kind of like being in poverty, even though you're making $50,000 to $60,000 a year, right? Because things are so expensive down there. So she was working several jobs. So part of what her stress came from overwork. And then once she passed on, suddenly some of the other, my fellow supervisors started using that as a way to go after other people in the department who would have stepped into her place or who would have been a better boss or who would understand what was going on. Yeah. That's when I started having trouble because people were being harassed and targeted. And then they would call me up at home on the weekends or when I was off and crying and screaming about being targeted, right? This is crazy. Why am I working in a place that's so toxic? You know, it's like we should be mourning this person, not conducting a witch hunt. And that's what was going on. And I just decided that it was too crazy for me. And I decided to go back to school because there was the only thing I could think of at the time is that unless I had letters behind my name, nobody was going to listen to me about this problem that was going on.
Well, they're listening to you now. And so I guess part of it maybe in your pursuits was that people were coming to you. So you obviously are an empathetic person, and maybe that led you to do this work. I just want to go back to the interesting aspect for me and how much your story resonated with me about a dysfunctional family. I come at it from an opposite perspective, and we ended up at the same place. I came from an adoring family, not dysfunctional. My mom was loving. My dad was caring. They were married for over 50 years. And so when I got into the workforce, I thought, and I will say, I was a very good son. I didn't do drugs. I worked hard at school, all these kinds of things. I didn't cause them any difficulty ever. And so I thought when I got into the workforce that if I just did the right things, I'd get love back. So you had the dysfunction and looking for something different. I thought if I just did the things I did as a son, I mean, I wasn't thinking about it at the time, but I just thought if I'm a good person, hardworking, devoted, all those things, that I would get the love back. And we ended up at the same place. I just got targeted and bullied and mistreated.
Oh, well, I think we look at work from, and we are, you know, in school, we see things as if we do good, if we do a good job, if we actually succeed at our lessons, then we will have a good job out of that. There's a meritocracy that doesn't really exist, right? Because
yes.
Who you know, and not even what you can do sometimes is what gets you for moving forward in the workplace. So we're expecting something, we're raised to expect something, and then that's not what pans out for us.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's so true. So you see workplace bullying and incivility every day in your work. And I was in media, I was in television. You were in Silicon Valley. I've talked to people in IT, healthcare, education, nonprofit. What are the kind of behaviors, the incivility that you're seeing and hearing about?
Well, right now, I am a moderator on Safe Harbor, which is a site started by Gary Namy to support targets.
Yeah.
And what I am hearing more about is cyberbullying. And it's actually very female targeted. And it's kind of scary because people are being stalked through their ring cameras, and through their cameras on their computers, and police can't do anything about it. So people feel really helpless in the face of somebody watching them all the time and not being able to stop it. And it's very frightening, actually, to hear these stories.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all over. It sure is. And so I saw a very interesting social post of yours that I wanted you to expound on, if you don't mind. You said that workplace bullying reverses Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Can you go into detail about that, about how, you know, workplace bullying affects us all?
Well, just to start out, Maslow didn't create the pyramids, and a journalist created it. But, you know, as psychologists, we do use these models to help explain the theories that we're working on. And so Maslow's theory is basically that if we are going to reach self-actualization, which is the top level of development as a human and as an adult, that we need to build on different kinds of safety. So we need to first have, you know, the basic safety needs, that we can take care of ourselves, that we can feed ourselves. And then based on that, then we can develop relationships. And based on that kind of safety, we continue up until we reach self-actualization. But what happens when we're being bullied is that the bully starts with the fact that we feel good about ourselves and that we can do our jobs, and they're threatened in some way. So they start to take that away from us, and then they isolate us. So we don't feel like we have relationships anymore. And then it keeps going down till we get to the bottom where we lose our jobs. And then we don't feel like we feel safe at all, because we can't sleep at night. We're not sure we can pay our bills. We don't have a roof over our heads if we can't pay our bills. So it's this tearing down of what we have been taught is motivation that moves us forward through life, and motivation that actually causes us to do a better job at work and develop better relationships and be loving individuals, right? All of that gets taken away from us.
Oh boy, it so speaks to me in my experience. And it doesn't matter what job you're in. I think we all are looking for some form of validation, appreciation in our jobs. It doesn't matter if you're an executive, if you're an intern right out of college, a medical intern, a doctor. It doesn't matter how much you're being paid, it seems to me. But that's exactly how it happened to me. And I was a boss. I managed a lot of people in television. Executive produced my own shows. But there were experiences where I had that happen, where I was losing my self-esteem, losing my confidence, but I couldn't show it because I had to manage my staff and I had to be, you know, the kind of leader that I wanted to be. And there's so much at stake, as you represent, not just our self-esteem, but our ability to pay our bills, our kind of popularity in the workplace, which matters. And then our health goes, our security goes. And I don't know if this comes up in your work, but the problem for me was that I loved the work, but more so anything in my mind was better than just what you said, going home without a job and sitting on my couch wondering what's going to become of me. So I allowed myself to be treated in ways I never should have looking back on it, because anything was better than sitting at home, you know, on a Monday morning, watching everybody go to work, and I don't know where my next paycheck's going to be.
Well, a lot of people end up staying a lot longer than they should because they get stuck. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've heard the story. I just love my job. I wanted to be left alone to do it, right?
Yes, that's how I felt. Yes.
That is such a common comment that I hear over and over again. And it's unfortunate that people who love their jobs and are trying to do a good job and trying to succeed at work are the ones that are being pushed out, right? We have all of this emphasis that went on, especially in the 2010s and the 2020s, moving into after the pandemic, but this whole idea of employee engagement is what gets taken away. You can't have engaged employees if they have to watch their back, if they're afraid they're going to be attacked, if they're afraid their work is going to be sabotaged, if they're afraid somebody's going to jump on them the minute they stay.
Yeah,
there's just no engagement. You're just too paranoid at a certain point because nothing feels right, and you feel like there's disequilibration taking place around you.
Yeah, no, that's so true. I mean, I know in my own career, every time there was a ping for an email, my heart would start to race, and depending on whose name then came up, yeah, and that's a horrible way to live because if the wrong name came up, you knew there was going to be trouble. And that's just a horrible way to work. And so that leads me to asking a little bit about your ebook, 10 Steps to Overcome Workplace Bullying, because I'm still doing this work and that's why I've gotten involved, because I'm interested in helping others who've been through it. And frankly, there's a little self-interest here in talking to people like you. I'm learning and I'm healing. So I don't think I ever really overcame workplace bullying. If anything, I'd like to say that maybe I was resilient, which is not maybe the best way to deal with it. But having said that, can you give us a sense of what we can find there? What are some thoughts you have in the ebook, but also just in your work about overcoming psychological harassment or workplace aggression?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because actually, since I wrote that book, I've been working on a course called Building Better Boundaries, which I hope to put into print by the end of the year.
Great.
Because I really think, I really had to stop and ask myself, why am I being harassed? Why that person up there is not being harassed?
Yeah.
One of my chapters is about all the things that are out in the literature about why you may be harassed. You know, it could simply just be that you stepped into a job, or it could be that you're too nice a person, or it could be that you don't push back, right? Because there are studies that say employees are healthier and happier if they are able to push back. So I started looking into what does it take to push back without being somebody who outbullies the bully, which is, you know, my dysfunction I grew up like. And if you scream at a bully and you're louder than they are, or if you punch them, then they're going to go and we'll leave you. But that doesn't necessarily.
No, I mean,
an adult bully.
Well, and you can go back to the playground where, you know, the kid's being bullied, and thankfully there's, at least in some communities, zero tolerance for this kind of thing, whereas there's pretty much 100% tolerance in many workplaces. But if the bully's 5'6", you know, as a seventh grader, and you're 4'8", it's pretty hard to take the bully on. I mean, that's a pretty tough thing to do.
Yeah, well, and as adults, we don't really go out on the playground and battle it out. You know, most of this stuff is covert, and that's probably why most people don't see it. And it's really very targeted, so that there's this conversation going on between you and the bully that nobody's really in on.
Yeah.
Right. That has a lot to do with personal pricks and punches. And but the whole thing that I've learned in studying this is that there are ways you can see this coming through body language. And I used Dr. Virginia Satir's work on modes, on body modes. And I used Dr. Suzette Hayden Elgin's work on the gentle art of verbal self-defense. And combining that with really understanding your values and the boundaries that matter where you're having trouble and how you can put those together to, you know, all of those come together, you can develop strategies to push back against people. And putting it on the bully is often a good way to get them to stop, because bullies don't generally have values, and generally they're not used to having somebody ask them to explain themselves. So if you say, well, why did you say that? Or what makes you think I would do something like that? Kind of causes them to step back. And you can actually use this in social media as well, because bullies don't like to be pushed.
Yeah. No, I think it's so clear to me that that's a good strategy if you phrase it properly and if you come with the right, I guess, bravado, if you will. But in the moment, I think for so many of us, that's so difficult. So I know you're dealing quite a bit with bully targets, as they're called, or bully victims. I don't know, but I'd love to know your perspective, or if you come across mean-spirited bosses themselves, and what your perspective is on whether they can truly change their ways. I mean, I want to believe that it's possible, but I haven't seen a lot of it in my career.
Well, what I tell people is that real bullies don't have the same brains as we do, and that we walk around assuming that everybody's brain is the same.
Yeah.
But when you're dealing with a predator, their brain is not going to act like yours. So some mean-spirited bosses are just probably like you. You're in a position where you're a nice guy and you really want to do the right thing and you want to be a good leader, but you have a leader dumping stuff on you.
Yes.
You need to turn around and deal with, you don't know how to deal with it, right? With your work crew, the reports to you. But then there are just a lot of predators out there right now. And I think it's, you know, I don't want to get too political, but leadership is everything as far as I'm concerned. And having a malignant narcissist as a president, it sort of opened up Pandora's box.
Yeah.
And allowed a lot of people to come out with their worst behavior that, you know, it wasn't acceptable before, but hey, now the leader's doing it, we get to do it. So that's what I tell people. I tell people leadership is everything. People that follow the leader, people get their permissions from the leader. So that's part of the problem with staying in a workplace that's toxic. If your boss is toxic, nothing's going to get better. You do not have the power to change anything. Only the leader does. Nothing. That's like organizational psychology 101.
Yeah.
And then everybody buys in because the leader's doing it.
Yeah. And then it often flows downward from the top down. I try very hard never to treat my team that way. And I even said to Dr. Gary Namy, I said, oh my gosh, I might've been a bully boss. And he said, well, Andy, how often did you know, lose your temper? Where, oh, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 times a year probably. And how did you feel about it? Oh, I felt awful. Couldn't sleep if I was wrong, you know, and I apologized. And he's like, you're not a bully. You know, we all have bad days. We're not talking about bosses, I think, and I hope you'll agree with this. We're not talking about any of us having a bad day, having low blood sugar, whenever it is, being ill-tempered. It's about this constant action that is counterproductive. So let me ask you about that, because I know you've said that work should not hurt. I think that's a quote, but for many of us, it often does. Why do so many managers do this to us when, at least from what I've seen, and you're the expert, so much of the data shows that it's literally counterproductive. I work very hard. I didn't work harder because someone was micromanaging me or belittling me or underappreciating me. You know, so Why is it so prevalent?
I think that's a really good question. And I think the other part of that question is, you know, once you run into an organization where a group is toxic, how do you fix it? And that's something I'm still struggling with. But
yeah,
it takes work to be a good leader. It takes understanding. And not everybody's putting that work in, because as I mentioned earlier, it's not a meritocracy out there. You're very rarely earning your position because you are good at what you need to be doing in that position. You're often put there because you have some technical expertise, or you kissed up the somebody. You know, you're the boss's favorite, or you supported the boss in some way, and he or she brought you in from their former job, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So toxicity kind of flows from that, and people. No, they're the ones making the decision. They don't really feel like they have the choice to listen to you or not. You don't have the choice to listen to your boss or not, right?
No.
But they have a choice to listen to you, and most of the time they don't listen. They have ideas about what they're going to do, and you just better do it.
Yeah, and I found, and I know the data shows, you know, you lose good people. It costs a lot of money to find new people. It costs time. You often have to pay the next person more. I mean, there's so many indications. And the dedicated ones, the devoted ones, leave, or the company leaves them, and the company's no better off. So that's a crucial issue you address.
It is, but I do have to say that the anti-bullying community used that argument for about 25 years, and now we have left that for the whole idea of the brain damage issue. And it comes from PTSD, and CPTSD is a version of that. But the whole thing is that organizations already have people leaving baked in to their budgets and bottom lines, and they don't care. They expect people to leave. They expect to have to get new people. It doesn't mean anything to them. It doesn't matter if you've been there 20 years or 2 years.
Yeah.
They expect you to leave. And if you walk out the door with all kinds of institutional knowledge, that doesn't seem to be important as much as keeping the boss happy.
Isn't that just so striking that's the case? I mean, when you know, you're just working so hard to, in my case, and I think all of our cases, to make the boss happy, make the company money, or whatever the mission is. It could be nonprofit, whatever the mission is, you're working so hard. And we're not talking about, at least I'm not talking about somebody who shows up to work late, doesn't do assignments on time, is disrespectful or drunk, you know. We're talking about hardworking people, devoted people, loyal people, people doing good work. It's just beyond me how I think you need to be taught how to be a good leader. I don't know that you need to be taught and have the self-awareness about treating people in a civil manner. But, I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, I think there are thousands of books of leadership out there. And I think there are lots of opportunities to study it. I mean, I studied it.
Yeah.
And it takes effort and desire and motivation, and not everybody has that, you know. Their idea of power and being a leader is just telling people what to do.
Yeah. And being tough on them, which I just don't get, as long as they're doing their best and we learn from each other. I mean, I think, and the biggest, I've been in communications and media, and what I kept seeing by virtue of this toxic environment is you get a chilling effect. So people won't share stories, or they start turf building because they need to protect their turf. They don't mention when something's not quite working, or they don't share a really good idea for fear of being shot down. All these things. In my business, we called it a chilling effect, which just kills businesses, in my view. So let me go back a little bit. You talked about it, and, intuitively, I would have thought, and I know this is not true, that during the pandemic with Zoom and remote work, that there'd be less of it, less of this kind of workplace aggression. But if I understand it right, given all the people you're talking to and the organizations you're working with, do you feel like this issue is getting worse given our public discourse as well, or our political discourse? Is the issue getting worse, or is it starting to diminish somewhat?
No, I think it's getting worse. And all the reasons you were bringing up before is why there's a lot of quiet quitting going on, and people are refusing to return to work because they don't want to walk back into a toxic environment. I mean, they were it's not like there wasn't that going on at home while people were working at home. Like there were key counters, you know, how many times you're typing on your keyboard.
Right.
And
right.
A lot of people had to keep their Zoom on all day so that the person could watch them work because they didn't trust them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that basic level of lack of trust that really makes people feel disengaged, right? Because, you know, you take on a job, you really want to do it. Of course, there are some people out there who are like, you mentioned, you know, like they don't do their work, they don't show up, blah, blah. But that's a minority. No. They're not the majority.
Yeah.
What we're talking about and people who are bullied are usually the best workers. Why would you push your best workers out? It's the best worker in all the places I went to. And in Silicon Valley, I had to leave because I had no power to stop all this screaming and crying and somebody harassing these. I had no power at all.
Yeah.
You know,
I worked on a television show. I won't go deep into it. I was a senior supervising producer, and it was such a time. In this case, most of the bullies, if you will, that I came across in my career were men. In this case, women ran the show, and I loved working for some women that I worked for. It became so toxic. I started counting the number of, and it was mostly 95% of female staff. And I stopped counting at about 12, the number of young women that came into my office and started bursting into tears because of how toxic. And they were being abusive to me, the top management. Then kind of ostracized me. They fired the first executive producer, a woman, ostracized her. I mean, this was kind of the way things were in that world, in the syndicated television world. But I mean, literally a dozen women, I have Kleenex box, you know, because it was so bad. And these were all good, hardworking people, and it just didn't matter. And the show got canceled because of it, no question about it. So, it's happening everywhere. And I want to let you know how much I've learned from you, how much I appreciate the work you're doing in this realm. I'm just trying to add my voice. I don't have any letters that go with my name. So I'm thrilled to be able to talk to the real experts. And I want to thank you for this important and informative conversation. And I value your knowledge and what you're bringing to it. And I know everybody watching and listening is too. Matt, having said that, I understand you have an offering for the people who are watching today.
Yes. In my book, I have a resource list. And on Safe Harbor, I've been expanding that list. So I'm going to put it together into one big list. And it has some legal resources on it, which are very valuable. And so if people come to my website, which is www.essentialbusinessbehaviors.com, and there's a window that floats out, you can sign up and I will send that to you.
Well, great. There's so many people that are hurting that aren't aware of what they're going through or that they can change their circumstance. And I think that'll be very helpful. So thank you so much for that. Final word for me, we call ourselves bully targets, but now let's aim to change the workplace for good. Thanks for watching.
Thank you.